From claims of healings and visions to the world's most inexplicable events, whether you're a believer or a skeptic, the truth is always worth the hunt.
EWTN Radio presents The Miracle Hunter with Michael O'Neill.
Welcome to The Miracle Hunter Radio Show on EWTN Radio. This is Michael O'Neill. I'm The Miracle Hunter. One of the most incredible types of miracles that we see throughout Christian history are these cases, perhaps only several hundred of the 10,000 or so saints throughout history, is the incorruptible body, the preserved bodies of saints. And this is a rare phenomenon. You see it all over Europe. Italy perhaps has the most incorruptibles, and there's always a great debate about what does incorruptibility mean anyway. Is it the preservation of a saintly body for all these centuries and unchanged, or some saints are partially incorrupt, some are totally incorrupt, some are incorrupt for just a few years, some are incorrupt for centuries. So it's a fascinating phenomenon. I have a chapter in my book, Science and the Miraculous, dedicated to this and the different things that go on to preserve the corpses once they're found. It's all complicated and interesting, but we had a case maybe a month or two ago now here in the United States. This Sister Wilhelmina from the Benedictines of Mary in Missouri, and her body was found to be incorrupt when they had to move the remains, and it's caused quite a stir in the Catholic world. So many people have gone there on a pilgrimage of sorts to see this amazing spectacle, and perhaps her sainthood cause will be underway as a result of the interest in St. Wilhelmina and her incorrupt body. So we're so excited today to be talking to Sister Scholastica from the Benedictines of Mary. She's going to be talking to us about what exactly was discovered there and what has been the aftermath. And we've been waiting a little bit to speak with her because we wanted to see how this would progress, and will there be a sainthood cause that's launched as a result of this interest. So we're so excited in just a little bit to be talking with Sister Scholastica. And later in the show, we'll be speaking with Dr. Mark Miravalli, one of our favorite guests. Normally, he's on here talking about Marian apparitions, but for today, with the feast day of St. Philomena upon us, we'll talk about his book, It's Time to Meet St. Philomena, an older book, but we haven't ever on the show talked about this incredible saint, St. Philomena, and the many miracles that are attributed to her. So we'll be excited to talk with Dr. Miravalli later in the show. Check out my EWTN series, Explore with the Miracle Hunter, on Saturdays at 6 p.m. Eastern Time. Tonight, I'll be going to New Orleans. The Our Lady of Prompt Succor devotion has inspired Catholics during the darkest periods in New Orleans history, and including a disastrous fire and a British attack during the War of 1812. And I'll be investigating the incredible story of Our Lady of Prompt Succor in New Orleans. And later next week, when we look at They Might Be Saints, next Thursday, the episode on the Rosary Priest, Patrick Payton, will be airing. And check out my latest book, Science and the Miraculous, How the Catholic Church Investigates the Supernatural, from 10 books, and available at EWTNRC.com. Later in the show, we're going to be looking at 365 Days with Mary Project, like we always do. For today, August 5th, we've got Our Lady of the Snows in Rome, in Italy, in the year 352. It's the great legendary founding of the Santa Maria Maggiore in Rome. And the might-be saint of the day is Blessed Arnaldo Pons from Spain in the 14th century. And the question of the week: how often are incorruptible saints' bodies destroyed by fire, flood, or other disaster? I'll do my best to try to answer that question later in the program. Let's take a look at the miracle news. We do this every week, where we talk about the miracles happening around the world and those things that relate to miracles. And last week, we had big miracle news with the announcement of that Eucharistic miracle approved in Honduras. And I've made contact with the bishop there, so he'll be coming on the program in the weeks or months ahead. So I'll be excited to find out more about that Eucharistic miracle. But when we talk about the miracle news this week, this isn't a miracle, but one that relates to miracles. So Pope Francis, ahead of his apostolic journey to Portugal, he prayed at the Roman Basilica of St. Mary Major, and he entrusted that visit and World Youth Day participants to the Blessed Virgin Mary, under the title of Our Lady of Fatima. So this was this past Monday afternoon. Pope Francis went to the Roman Basilica of St. Mary Major to pray before the icon of Mary, Solus Populi Romani, ahead of his apostolic journey to Portugal. And that's something that he does quite often before his journeys. He goes to pray in front of the same icon. And he entrusted his journey and the thousands of young people he will meet in the coming days to the Blessed Virgin Mary, according to the press office. And this is his fourth World Youth Day. And August 2nd through 6th will be the Pope departing for Lisbon, which is the hosting World Youth Day. And it marks the fourth time Pope Francis presides at the global celebration following World Youth Day in Rio, in Krakow, and Panama City in 2019. And so this will be a big moment. The last time he was there in Portugal, I was there too. This was May 13th, 2017, the 100th anniversary of the apparitions of Our Lady of Fatima and the canonization of the young shepherd children. And so he has a great devotion to Our Lady of Fatima. And so this will be a great visit there for Pope Francis. For more information on the miracles happening all around the world and those things that relate to miracles, connect to the Facebook page of The Miracle Hunter. And you can also find me on Instagram and Twitter. Let's take a look at Catholic Pub Trivia. We do this every week where we ask a trivia question, give out an answer to a writer who writes in with the fastest answer. And people who know me know that I love trivia. You might find me on some random night playing pub trivia, but this is Catholic Pub Trivia. And so last week we asked the question, which American saint was the oldest when they died? And the answer was Saint Catherine Drexel, the founders of the Sisters of the Blessed Sacrament for Indians and Colored People from Pennsylvania. She lived from 1858 to 1955. She was declared venerable and then beatified by Pope John Paul II and canonized in the year 2000 by Pope John Paul II. And writing in with the fastest answer was Martha Wynn. She will receive the image of the faces of Mary. In this week's question, we're talking about incorruptibles. And there's actually a famous film called The Untouchables, this 1987 Brian De Palma film. But in French, it's translated to Les Incorruptes, so it looks like it's spelled out The Incorruptibles, but it's The Untouchables. So so that tenuous connection launches our question today. Who was the Academy Award-winning Best Supporting Actor in that film, the 1987 film, The Untouchables? If you think that you know that answer and want to win the prize, the image, the faces of Mary, send me an email to miraclehunter@ewtn. Just go to my website, miraclehunter.com, send me a message that way, and answers and winners will be posted on the show page on miraclehunter.com. We need to take a short break, but when we come back, we're going to be talking with Dr. Mark Miravalli about Saint Philomena and her miracles. Stay with us for that.
Now, back to the Miracle Hunter on EWTN. Here's Michael O'Neill.
Welcome back. You're listening to the Miracle Hunter radio show on EWTN Radio. This is Michael O'Neill. I'm the Miracle Hunter. We've talked a lot about wonder-working saints on this program over the years, and there's been one saint who I haven't ever done a program on, and that is Saint Philomena. She has a great following. I know many people who pray to Saint Philomena regularly. And we have a great interest in her internationally. And her feast day is upon us. August 11th is when we celebrate the feast of this saint. And we're so excited today to talk to somebody who we normally have on to talk about Marian apparitions. But today we are going to reflect back on Saint Philomena. And he has a book. It's called It Is Time to Meet Saint Philomena. And that is Dr. Mark Miravalli. Welcome back to the program, Dr. Miravalli.
Thank you, Michael. Pleasure to be with you.
Now, Saint Philomena is an interesting kind of saint, and you'll get into the history of sort of the how her popularity has grown in more recent years, perhaps, and how there's miracles that are attributed to her. But her whole being an early Christian martyr, her whole path to sainthood and recognition by the faithful, even more so, has been interesting. So tell us a little bit first, who was the person, Saint Philomena?
Well, it's a fascinating history, Michael, and in fact, St. Philomena is the only saint in the history of the Church that was canonized not based on her personal history, but based on the undeniable documentation of the plethora of miracles that came through her intercession. So, in a nutshell, they found a tomb in the Greek section of the Catacombs of Priscilla, and it had markings on it which would indicate a martyrdom. And so it was investigated by the Vatican, a Monsignor in charge at the time. This is back in 1805. And a priest from a southern Italian town called Mugnano wanted to raise the spiritual life of his parish by getting a martyr relic to be brought to his town. And so Father De Lucia was granted the relics of Philomena. And it's just story after story. These are all documented, by the way, of miracle after miracle, even by the very fact that as they're bringing her, the remains to Mugnano, he hears a knocking from the box under which, from which the relics are positioned, which are actually under his feet, close to, you know, the bottom of the carrier, if you will. And it was an indication that she didn't like being down there. And so she has also become known for these three knocks. Many have testified that before St. Philomena has granted a miracle, he knocks three times. And so when they finally get to Mugnano, there is the town paralytic is cured. The bells start ringing without anybody ringing them. It's just miracle after miracle is the only way you can say it. And that's why when Gregory the 16th raises her to the altars of the church in 1837, he calls her the Thermaturga, the wonder worker of the church. So I think the best way you can summarize St. Philomena, she's kind of the Padre Pio of the 19th century. There are more documented miracles to St. Philomena than any other saint. And that includes all the miracles that came through St. John Vianney. St. John Vianney attributed all of the miracles that happened in his parish to the intercession of St. Philomena.
Absolutely amazing. We're talking today with Dr. Mark Miravalli about he's the author of the book, It's Time to Meet St. Philomena. It was released some years ago, but this is a great time with the feast day of St. Philomena upon us to talk about this great saint. And she's a martyr, right? I mean, did she not go through the canonization process or the recognition of her being a martyr earlier? Was it only the discovery of her tomb and her miracles that led to her being recognized?
Yeah, it's really the latter, Michael. So what takes place is Pauline Jericho, who was a well-known woman, she's a French woman. She actually started what's called the Propaganda Fide, which is now kind of the Congregation for Evangelization. But she was a worker in France, and she got all the French women to just donate a penny for the missions. And this became so huge that the Vatican took it over. And so she was well known in the Vatican, but she got sick and she was deathly ill. And St. John Vianney directed her to Mugnano, to St. Philomena. And she goes by, and on the way down to Mugnano, she stops at the Vatican and she speaks to Pope Gregory the 16th, who knew her well because of the Propaganda Fide. And she says, if I return on foot from Mugnano to the Vatican, will you canonize Philomena? And he says, yes, of course I will. That will be a first-class miracle, but then tells the sister after she leaves, it's impossible because she looked like death. That was his quote. So on August 10th, after 3 days of prayer down in Mugnano, during the benediction of the Eucharist, Pauline Jericho is completely healed at the tomb of St. Philomena, and she walks back with hundreds of people walking with her from Mugnano, which is about a 2.5-hour train ride, up to the Vatican. And she walks in on the Pope without being announced and says, is this an apparition or is it really you? And the Pope has her stay for a year to verify it. And then finally in 1837, in virtue of that final miracle, of which there would be hundreds to come, she was raised to the altar of the church. That's why, even though private revelation, two individuals received private revelation, which was confirmed by the Holy Office at that time, that she was in fact a Greek princess, that in fact Diocletian lusted after her and wanted her to be his wife, but she refused, and so she went through a series of tortures, which had a number of miracles regarding those as well. But only through private revelation that we know the history of St. Philomena, but she's canonized, again, not because of her confirmed personal history, but the undeniability of the miracles. The congregation, one other very quick miracle, the congregation for the doctrine of faith at that time sent out dust from her bones to different dioceses and said, pray, offer this to the sick and things like that, along with dust from several other saints, already canonized saints. And they got so many miracles reported back from the dust of St. Philomena that they again confirmed the fact that truly she is a saint, and this is being confirmed through heaven by this plethora of miracles.
Absolutely amazing. We're talking today with Dr. Mark Miravalli, renowned Mariologist, talking to us today about St. Philomena. His book is It's Time to Meet St. Philomena, an older book, but perfect timing to talk about St. Philomena with her feast day being on August 11th. And so when we talk about these miracles, and this is somebody who's an early Christian martyr, and as you mentioned, knowledge of her and her and the devotion that has surrounded her is a very modern concept. I mean, she wasn't known to the world until more recent times. How do people embrace St. Philomena even today? What is she the patron saint of? What do people seek her out for even today?
Yeah, Michael, well, it's fascinating because, as was told in two separate private revelations, which is really confirmed because this sister Luisa started receiving messages from the statue of St. Philomena. She thought she was going mad. She went to her superior, said, should I be open to this? They wrote to Mugnano, and these messages told exact details, known only to Father De Lucia, of what happened on the way from Rome to Mugnano, like the knocking incident that I made reference to. No one else knew that. So he knew that these were authentic. And so, indeed, in the process of revealing this, we know that St. Philomena, again, was this saint, this beautiful young princess. The parents were, a kind of lord and lady of a small region in Greece, and they were going to see Diocletian to petition against an unjust war. And Diocletian basically said, yes, I'll stop this war if you give me your daughter. But she had already vowed herself to virginity. And unfortunately, the parents, who had turned Christian previous, strongly suggested and tried to force Philomena against her vow of virginity. And so I bring this up, Michael, because St. Philomena is the ideal example, really a witness and patroness for young people trying to stay chaste and pure, even when, tragically, it's not supported by their parents. And we have to say, in reality, there are cases like that today, certainly, where the parents have gone astray, and the young people are trying to return to the faith and live the faith. So Mugnano gets around 1 million hits a year because of this explosion of devotion to St. Philomena. And also, having done radio shows and things like that, people have spontaneously called and said, I got this miracle from St. Philomena, and this happened to us. So it's really extraordinary.
Wonderful. Well, it's an incredible saint that people need to get to know. She is St. Philomena. Dr. Mark Miravalli, your book is It's Time to Meet St. Philomena. And as people sort of engage with her and pick up your book and learn about her, what should people be praying for? What should they be learning from her life that will inspire them to see her as the saint she is?
Yeah, it's really, number one, Michael, heroic sanctity and the willingness to suffer for purity. We've had some recent young witnesses to that that are being beatified and even canonized. But there are needs for models, young people who illustrate that you can be a saint and you can go upstream. You can oppose the secular emphasis on things like pornography or the kind of idolatry of the body, which is sadly going on now. And you can put the soul first. So number one, it's purity. Number two, it's the courage that young people can exhibit. And St. Philomena is a great model for that. And number three, even when you don't have parental support for doing the right thing for our Holy Catholic faith, St. Philomena has been raised for that. So she's really a soldier for Christ and really a warrior and therefore, just a perfect model for the youth. And so I would say, again, and even looking at the book, and people can get it if you want to go to motherofallpeoples.com, or it's available on typical book sites. It's a very short book, but it really tells the story of the saint that is super relevant for today's call for holiness and purity.
Wonderful. Well, we're so grateful to you, Dr. Mark Miravalli, joining us today to talk about St. Philomena and your book, It's Time to Meet St. Philomena. People can check out your work at motherofallpeoples.com. We encourage people to do that. Thank you so much, Dr. Miravalli, for joining us on today's program.
My pleasure, Michael. God bless you.
God bless. That was Dr. Mark Miravalli in fascinating, fascinating details about the life of St. Philomena. We need to take a short break, but when we come back, we're going to be trying to answer that question of the week. The incorrupt body of St. Benedict the Moor was recently incinerated, and there have been other incorruptibles who have been lost to disaster. Stay with us for that.
Now, back to the Miracle Hunter on EWTN. Here's Michael O'Neill.
Welcome back. You're listening to the Miracle Hunter radio show on EWTN Radio. This is Michael O'Neill. I'm the Miracle Hunter. Hey, I love getting your questions. People write in from around the world with questions about miracles happening in today's world and those that have happened centuries ago. And when I travel around the country, I give talks maybe 20 times a year. I talk at different conferences or parishes or other Catholic events, and I speak about miracles. I speak for about 45 minutes, and then I leave it open to questions at the end. And I always love to hear what people are thinking about when it relates to miracles. And so we had a good question this week. We've been talking a lot about incorruptibles on recent shows, and we'll be talking with Sister Scholastica related to the St. Wilhelmina incorruptible body in Missouri. But the question is from Gail. She says, "Dear Miracle Hunter, I just read that the incorrupt body of St. Benedict the Moor was mostly incinerated with the interior of Santa Maria de Jesu last week. How often is an incorruptible body lost to disaster like this one, like a wildfire?" Thank you, Gail. Well, thanks, Gail, for your question. And it is true that there are incorrupt bodies all over Europe, and especially in Italy, such as this one of St. Benedict the Moor. And that is unfortunate, of course, for that interior of the church to be burned, and also for that body to be burned. And we have seen this a number of times. There are perhaps as few as 200 incorrupt bodies of the 10,000 canonized saints in Christian history. So we're dealing with a small number there already, but there have been some cases of perhaps loss to fire or flood, or perhaps in times of Protestant revolt, we've seen the burning of the bodies of incorrupt bodies of saints. So unfortunately, this has happened a few times in Christian history, but not many. And in more typically, perhaps you see an incorrupt body which is incorrupt for hundreds of years, like St. Andrew Bobola in Poland, and he was one of the most remarkable cases of incorruption even recognized there in Rome. And Rome doesn't normally make commentary on incorrupt saints, but he was one of the ones highlighted by Prospero Lambertini when he wrote the criteria for the approval of claims of incorruption. He's a 17th century Italian cardinal who later became Pope Benedict the 14th. And so he wrote the rule book. And as such, we have cases of near-perfect incorruption that last for only so long, and then they go away for whatever reason. That's a question for God when we get to heaven. What is this incorruption business, and how does it all work? I don't really know myself. But anyway, thanks, Gail, for your question. And if you have a question for the Miracle Hunter, you can send me an email to miraclehunter@ewtn.com, or just go to my website, miraclehunter.com, click on the contact tab. You can send me a message that way. Let's take a look at the 365 Days with Mary project. We do this every week, where we talk about the Marian devotion of the day as it lines up exactly to the day's date. For today, August 5th, we've got Our Lady of the Snows from Rome, in the year 352. And the story goes that a wealthy but childless Roman couple, John and his wife, decided to leave their fortune to the church, and the Virgin Mary appeared to them on August 4th and told them that she wished a basilica to be constructed on Esquiline Hill to be outlined in snow. Pope Liberius also received the same vision, and when they met on the top of the hill, they discovered the footprint of a church outlined in snow, and the Pope ordered the construction of St. Mary Major Basilica, Santa Maria Maggiore. Although Pope Sixtus III did not include the story when he relocated the basilica a few centuries later and was removed in the 1969 General Roman Calendar, on the Feast of Our Lady of Snows in Rome, while rose petals are dropped from the ceiling on the church to commemorate the legend of the miracle. So those are white rose petals dropping from the ceiling. Absolutely amazing. So that's Our Lady of the Snows from August 5th in the year 352. For more information on the various titles of Mary all around the world, you can go to the 365 Days with Mary Project. You connect to the Facebook page of 10,000 followers. You can download the free app from the Apple App Store. Let's take a look at They Might Be Saints. We look at the sainthood news each and every week about the people on the path of sainthood. Those are servants of God, venerables, and blesseds. And so we'd like to keep you updated about the up-and-coming saints. So last month, Pope Francis received an audience, His Eminence Cardinal Marcello Semeraro, the prefect of the Dicastery for the Causes of Saints. And during this audience, the Pope authorized this dicastery to promulgate the decree regarding the heroic virtues of the servant of God, Lucia de Jesus de Corazao Immaculado, born Lucia dos Santos. She was professed order of the Discalced Carmelites. You know her as Sister Lucia of Fatima. And she was, according to the website, the order of the Discalced Carmelites, the distinction between her life and her apparitions is difficult because many of her sufferings had to be attributed to her. She was always kept hidden, protected, guarded in all the effort to keep together the exceptional nature of the events that she was a spectator for in the ordinariness of monastic life, like that of Carmel, can be seen in her life. And of course, that was Sister Lucia of Fatima. She's a venerable. With one miracle, she'll be a blessed. A second miracle, she'll be a saint. Now let's take a look at the Might Be Saint of the Day. We do this every week where we talk about the person on the path to sainthood whose death anniversary or feast day lines up to the day's date. And so for today, we've got Blessed Arnaldo Pons from Spain in the 14th century. Now, Blessed Arnaldo Pons, he was a Mercedarian friar. In 1382, he ransomed 48 Christians enslaved by Muslims in Almeria, Spain. And he sent in 1386 to ransom Christians in Tunis, in modern Tunisia. And he was abused and occasionally imprisoned as he made his way across North Africa. But he did not complete his mission. And he later retired to spend his final years in the Mercedarian convent of Santa Maria de Miracoli in Montefiore, Aragon, in northern Spain. And when he died of natural causes in the Santa Maria de Miracoli in Montefiore in Aragon, that is where he has been buried. And that is Blessed Arnaldo Pons from Spain in the 14th century. For more information on future They Might Be Saints, you can check out theymightbesaints.com, where we also have the listings for the up-and-coming programs of They Might Be Saints on EWTN. This week, we'll be looking at the charismatic priest, Father Patrick Payton, who pioneered the use of radio and television to bring the rosary to the world, staging massive rallies and enlisting Hollywood celebrities in his singular mission. We need to take a short break, but when we come back, we're going to be talking with Sister Scholastica about the incorruptible body of Sister Wilhelmina in that shrine of the Benedictines of Mary in Missouri. Stay with us for that.
Now, back to the Miracle Hunter on EWTN. Here's Michael O'Neill.
Welcome back. You're listening to the Miracle Hunter radio show on EWTN Radio. This is Michael O'Neill. I'm the Miracle Hunter. People who have picked up my book, Science and the Miraculous, know that I have a chapter in that book dedicated to the incorruptible bodies of saints. And this has happened many times in Christian history, but far fewer than you would think. There have been perhaps as many as 10,000 saints throughout Christian history, but only between 100 and 200 incorrupt saints have been officially recognized by the church. And there are very few examples here in the United States, but we have one that's just come to our attention in these past months. And that is, of course, Sister Wilhelmina, the beloved mother foundress of the Benedictines of Mary, Queen of Apostles. And this has been big news. I've been contacted by so many people around the world, news outlets and otherwise, that have been so interested in this phenomena where a body of a saintly person, perhaps, and has been preserved from the natural ravages of death. And so we are so excited. I have many friends who have gone there to this convent there in Missouri to see Sister Wilhelmina. And it brings to light the question of what happens next. Will the canonization cause into her life begin? Well, I'm so excited to talk today with Sister Scholastica from the Benedictines of Mary. Welcome to the program today, Sister Scholastica.
Thank you so much, Michael, and very happy to join you.
Well, thank you for being here. And this has been a big news item for people who study miracles like I do. This has gotten attention all over the world. And I can only imagine with your order and at your convent there, the attention perhaps turning it from a very quiet place to a place where the media and so many pilgrims from around the world have come to see Sister Wilhelmina. Before we get started, please tell us a little bit about the mother foundress of your order.
Sister Wilhelmina was actually born in 1924 in St. Louis, and she was born into a time of segregation. So the city of St. Louis had just adopted segregation laws, and being an African American as she was born in a black section of the city. And so at the time, the Catholic culture was very small, but her family was extremely active in the Catholic community. They were big supporters of the African-American parish there, St. Elizabeth of Hungary. And so they gave her the name Mary Elizabeth after Elizabeth of Hungary and in light of the parish. Mm. And the parish was staffed by Father William Marco, a Jesuit priest who was very active in the civil rights movement way ahead of his time, so back in the 20s through the 40s. And he and his brother actually took a vow to serve the blacks, and he made hundreds of Catholics within the black sector of St. Louis. And Sister Wilhelmina's father was among them. So Sister Wilhelmina, again, was part of a very vibrant community. Her parents went on to found the first black Catholic high school west of the Mississippi, and Sister Wilhelmina was the first graduate once it was accredited, so she was the valedictorian. And she had her sights set on a vocation from a very, very young age. She actually had an apparition of Our Lady starting at the age of 2, I believe, and has had them throughout her life up until the time she died. She entered the Oblate Sisters of Providence in 1941. She professed vows in 44. And then in 1995, she actually began our community, the Benedictines of Mary, Queen of Apostles, and it was something of a contemplative variant of what she had grown up with, because the Oblate Sisters of Providence have a Benedictine spirituality. They consider themselves to be third-order Benedictines. So Sister Wilhelmina founded us, and she founded us specifically to pray and sacrifice for priests. So after many years of service to the church, she dedicated her life to prayer, and it was very appropriate for her declining years to be so devoted to prayer, because that's one of the things she could do well and do best, I think, better than any of us. So we were very privileged to witness her death, which was an extremely holy death, and we actually had an inclination of her possible incorruptibility as she was lying in state. Because the longer we kept vigil with Sister Wilhelmina, the more beautiful she became. And so this was back in 2019. We buried her on the feast of, just before the feast of Our Lady Queen of Apostles at the end of May. And we exhumed her last April, this past April, a few months back. And we're very surprised in a way, but in a way not surprised to see that she had defied all of the natural ravages we would expect from death. We were told to just expect only bones when we exhumed Sister Wilhelmina's remains, but rather we found her body intact and with very, very little damage. There was some damage to the face because the coffin had caved in. She was not embalmed, but just placed in a simple wooden box. And apart from those naturally explained damages, you know, the dirt touching her face and such, everything else was there. And she's still flexible. Her eyes are still present. There's nothing missing. And so so we were surprised in a way, and in another way not surprised, because she had such a holy life, and we saw the way that God touched her throughout her life. And given her closeness to him, it sort of made sense. Although, as you said, it's such a rare miracle, it's something you almost don't dare hope for. But that's the sign that God gave to us through the life of our sister Wilhelmina, and it's something we're very happy to share with the world. It wasn't deliberate the way the news got out, but it did, and the pilgrims began to come.
Absolutely amazing. We're talking today with Sister Scholastica from the Benedictines of Mary, Queen of the Apostles. We're talking today, of course, about the incorruptible Sister Wilhelmina. And when we look at throughout Christian history, the discovery of incorruptibles, it's often times when in two scenarios, one where in a canonization cause where they're going to extract relics of the candidate for sainthood, or there's the translation or the move of the body of the deceased to another location. In your case, what was the inspiration for the move of the body of Sister Wilhelmina?
Yes, it was definitely the second case where we were exhuming in order to transfer her relics to our new St. Joseph altar, which actually is not an altar because it's not a place for Mass, but we were planning on having this behind the high altar of our church, and we thought it would be appropriate to have the remains of Sister Wilhelmina there so that she would be present in the church. And this is going back to a very ancient tradition in monastic life, to have the founder, the founding abbot in particular, to be buried within the church, sometimes in the very floor of the abbey church. So it's a very, very long-standing custom. And so the reason why we can't actually call it an altar is that she's not a saint. But nevertheless, there is what's called the familial piety, the veneration for the founder that exists in almost every order. And so drawing on this tradition, we transferred her relics, and we had to call the altar company and say, we need to adapt to the design here, mm-hmm. because we don't just have bones.
Amazing. So describe for those people who haven't seen the photos or who haven't visited, how is the body now displayed?
The body is now within something like the frame of an altar, except that we have glass in the front so that she is visible. We do have a removable frontal for the altar when and if it is necessary to place her out of view for a time. I don't foresee that happening right now, just because we've had such a flow of pilgrims ever since with the exhumation and transfer of her relics to the shrine on May 29th, which was the anniversary of her death. So anyone coming to our Abbey Church would come in and see that she's to the right. We had to move the location of the altar from behind the high altar to the side, and this was at the recommendation of a very dear friend, a member of the hierarchy, who said, you know, legally now speaking, we might want to just transfer the location, but also for your own sakes, not to have the distraction. Yes. Of a constant flow of pilgrims going behind the high altar as we're trying to pray, because we weren't anticipating that this would become a pilgrimage site so quickly.
Absolutely. We're talking today with Sister Scholastica from the Benedictines of Mary, Queen of the Apostles. We're talking about their mother foundress there, Sister Wilhelmina, whose body has been discovered to be incorrupt. And so, of course, when we talk about sainthood, we talk about some people will have the assumption that incorruptibility could be used as one of the miracles for canonization, but it cannot be. According to the work of Prospero Lambertini, an Italian cardinal born in the 1600s, who later went on to become Pope Benedict XIV, he wrote the whole rule book on how incorruptibility is to be viewed by the Church, and that is still the same set of rules or understanding that's used in the Church today. And they say that because incorruptibility doesn't imply the intercessory power of a saint or potential saint, it isn't to be used for sainthood, as a sainthood miracle. But I imagine that with all the attention and devotion and interest in Sister Wilhelmina, there is a certain following of her now that perhaps is what Rome would require to launch a canonization cause.
Talk to us a little bit about how these events, this discovery of her body in such a preserved state, might lead to a canonization effort.
Yes, it is true that it's not one of the miracles, simply because there can be natural factors. Of course, we've ruled that out already. We've had doctors come and examine both the situation with Sitruelmina's body, her coffin, the ground, etc., and they have ruled out any possibility of any natural phenomenon that would be contributing to this appearance of the incorruptibility. In fact, the coroner, our local coroner, said that the state of the body really is inexplicable, and this is a non-Catholic. So the fact that we do have this documented now is a good thing. Nevertheless, it can't be regarded as a miracle, only an indicator of holiness. But as far as proceeding with the canonization cause, we are kind of going at it in sort of an old-fashioned way, because when you look at some of the older saints, I'm thinking in particular of St. Anthony, St. Francis of Assisi, or many of our Benedictine saints, like Hildegard of Bingen, who was not canonized formally until Pope Benedict named her a doctor of the Church. So there are many cases where there's a popular cultus that's well-established before an official investigation begins, and that's sort of what's been happening organically here,
yes,
apart from, you know, any kind of planning. So yes, there has been definitely a cultus established amongst the faithful very strongly, and it's something we're witnessing from day to day, just with the flow of pilgrims, because again, we're welcoming, I would say, at least 100 extra people each day now that the crowds have died down, because during Memorial Day weekend it was around 50,000 and more. So it was really a huge number of people, a huge response. And I think just really looking for these signs of holiness, even though it's not regarded as an official miracle. Right now, we're looking at a time frame of 5 years, which is the required minimum to begin a cause of canonization. And our bishop has been very gracious and guiding us through it. He's also a canon lawyer as well. So we haven't met the five-year mark yet, but once it does come, we will have things documented and ready should he choose to open the cause.
Absolutely. We're talking with Sister Scholastica, from the Benedictines of Mary, Queen of the Apostles, about the foundress, Sister Wilhelmina, and her incorrupt body. And will that lead to a canonization cause? Well, that's exciting. I guess you only have a year or two to go before that five-year window has elapsed, so
yes,
you have a little time to get all the documentation together, or to at least start to explore the possibility. Now, I have heard this, and maybe you can verify this, that there have been some claims of miracles that already are being attested to through Sister Wilhelmina. Is that something that you're experiencing with these large crowds coming through?
Yes, very much so. We've seen different variations of miracles. Some are instant, some take a while, some are not apparent immediately, some are of the physical realm, and some are of the spiritual realm. I think perhaps some of the most remarkable ones have been cases of cancer. We've had a few cases of cancer that have been reversed. One was a mother of 8 children who had liver cancer, and she actually did not come to the shrine, but was praying to Sister Wilhelmina for her intercession for her cancer.
Wow.
And the next time she went to the doctor said, not only is it diminished, it's gone. Your cancer is gone. So it had completely disappeared. Another woman also visited Sister Wilhelmina for the Feast of Pentecost. She was diagnosed also with advanced cancer. She had been battling it for 5 years. She went in for surgery shortly after visiting Sister Wilhelmina, and it was as if the cancer cells had been zapped within her. They were all dead. The doctors said they had never seen anything like it. So that's another miracle that we may have documentation for. Another was a priest who came and met us as we were processing with Sister Wilhelmina, about to reinter her into the new St. Joseph Shrine. And the priest had just suffered a heart attack 2 weeks before. He had been diagnosed with congestive heart failure and was told to prepare for his death. He heard a voice saying to him, "Go to Wilhelmina." And his first response was, "Where's Wilhelmina?" And he walked out of the chapel and got a text from his friend saying, "There's a new incorruptible in Missouri. Her name is Sister Wilhelmina." And he said, "Aha, this is where I must go." So So he came and, again, met us in the driveway as we were processing. He left feeling 200% better. The doctors, he got two opinions from his doctors who said that he now not only has been cured, they said he had the heart of a 95-year-old, now it's back to being the heart of a 59-year-old. They said he has another 40 years to go, and he has no signs of a heart attack. Huh. That is completely gone. His heart is completely healed. So that these are kind of the big ones. We have a few others, a child who was cured of food allergies. We have another child who was bedridden with a mysterious illness and was running around the next day. We've also had a great many spiritual conversions and reports of return to the sacraments, conversions to the Catholic faith. And so for a while, we were getting reports of miracles every day, just with Sister Wilmina. They were amassing that quickly. So we're grateful that we do have this year to try to line things up, because I think if it had come at us all at once, we might be a little too overwhelmed.
But, yeah, amazing. But I'm sure someone there is keeping busy writing all these things down, because
yes.
in a short amount of time that will come into play, those miracles through her intercession. Well, we're so grateful to you, Sister Scholastica, from the Benedictines of Mary, Queen of the Apostles, for telling us these incredible happenings there in Missouri. And people can go to the website, benedictinesofmary.org. Tell us a little bit, if somebody were wanting to visit, and I think based on some of the things that you're telling us today, you're going to get even more visitors. How can people find out more, or how can they visit the convent there?
Well, our abbey is in Gower, which is just south of St. Joseph, Missouri, and it's a very simple setup. I think people are a little surprised when they come here because, of course, we're not built as a basilica where you might see the remains of an incorruptible saint. We're, just an abbey, but a kind of a simple abbey. But nevertheless, it is, if anyone is willing to make the trek, again, it's a bit of a remote area. But nevertheless, we're very, very happy to host pilgrims between 8:30 a.m. to 8 p.m., and we do have a continuous flow. So usually what happens is people come, they venerate they come to honor the relics of Sister Wilmina. But also we do have our daily mass, the chanted mass, at 11 a.m. each day. And I think that's a real inspiration for a lot of people, because this is the same setting in which Sister Wilhelmina lived, so they can see us at our prayer, join us in our prayer, just as Sister Wilhelmina did. And I think that that's something that she would like very much, for everyone to experience her life as she lived it and sharing in the sister's prayer.
Wonderful. Well, we're so grateful to you, Sister Scholastica, from the Benedictines of Mary, Queen of the Apostles. People can find out more about the incredible life of Sister Wilhelmina and the happenings there in Missouri. You can go to benedictinesofmary.org, and they have a page dedicated to the life of Sister Wilhelmina there. So thank you so much, Sister Scholastica, for joining us on today's program.
You're most welcome. God bless you, and thank you for all you do for Holy Mother Church.
God bless. That was Sister Scholastica from the Benedictines of Mary. Absolutely amazing news related to Sister Wilhelmina. We'll pray for the furthering of her cause, if that's God's will. And that's all the time we have for today's show. If you missed any of this episode or want to catch up on past episodes, you can go to ewtn.com/radio, check out the audio archives, or download the free EWTN app. I'd like to thank our guest today, Sister Scholastica from the Benedictines of Mary, talking about the incorruptible Sister Wilhelmina, and also Dr. Mark Miravalli talking to us about the incredible miracle-working saint, Saint Philomena. Check out Explore with the Miracle Hunter. Tonight, I travel to New Orleans. Our Lady of Prompt Succor has inspired Catholics during the darkest periods in New Orleans history, including a disastrous fire and a British attack during the War of 1812. I'll be investigating that fascinating devotion. And look for my latest book, Science and the Miraculous, How the Church Investigates the Supernatural. It's out from Tan Books and available at ewtnrc.com. I'd like to thank you today for joining me on Miracle Hunter, where from claims of healings and visions to the world's most inexplicable events, whether you're a believer or a skeptic, the truth is always worth the hunt. Talk to you next week.